This is an utterly disturbing story. My husband and I are both doctors. We both have pretty hectic work schedules. We have a son who is only 4 years old. It was difficult to raise him and manage the work at the same time. Hence, we had to rely on babysitters to keep an eye on him. He's always been a pretty active child. The area we live in can definitely be considered safe until this incident shook all of us. It happened last week, and I'm still trying to get over the trauma. My husband and I work in the same hospital, and we're both surgeons. After the pandemic and lockdown period, our work stress increased rapidly while Monty stayed home alone. So, my husband and I often kept a babysitter to watch over him. I posted an ad on a very famous social media platform. 3 days after posting the ad, I received a call from a girl named Diana. Diana was a student, and she seemed very interested in the job over the phone. Without thinking much, I told her to come by and babysit on Thursday evening. The day arrived, and if I'm being honest, Diana and Monty got along really well. They started to play puzzles, and I got relieved that Monty would be in good hands. My husband and I left for the hospital. I told Diana that we would be home by 10. I also told her that we made a pasta for them, and it was in the fridge but needed to be microwaved, and that Monty's bedtime was at 8 p.m. Diana smiled at me and said, "Sure, Mrs. Mendez." As I got in the car, I saw Monty and Diana standing at our house porch and waving me goodbye. After that day, Diana became a regular choice whenever we needed a babysitter. She became good friends with Monty, and surprisingly, Monty listened to her with full attention. I was happy to see this sudden change in Monty at first. One day, my husband was out of the station at a medical conference. I took the day off so that I could spend time with Monty. I decided to draw him a bath and then watch a cartoon movie with him. I placed him inside the bathtub, and when I went to scrub his back, I got shocked. There was a weird symbol drawn onto his shoulders with a black marker pen. I didn't understand what the symbol meant. I asked Monty what the sign was, and he just replied saying it was nothing. That was the first time I felt like my son was hiding something from me. I asked him again who did this to him, and he replied, saying, "Diana and I were playing. She has a tattoo like this. I wanted one too, and that's when she drew it on me." I know I should have dealt with this matter with more priority, but at that moment it appeared like a silly childish wish, and nothing else. Fast forward a week later, and I was doing regular house chores. I was cleaning the window of Monty's room. I opened it to wipe the outside surface of the glass. That's when I found a cross-like figure. As I looked more closely, I noticed strands of hairs tied to it too. I didn't know where it came from. I thought maybe the window brought it here. I dumped it in the dustbin and didn't say anything to my husband. I overlooked the alarming situation that day. More time passed, and I realized all that was happening wasn't just some weird coincidence. My husband and I were sitting in the living room watching a movie, and suddenly he said, "Amy, I was thinking of asking you something." I replied asking what it was, and he said, "Did you notice anything strange in Monty's behavior?" Until now, I was keeping that feeling to myself, but as Simon mentioned it, I immediately looked at him with worried eyes. Simon went on to say, "Last night, when I went to the kitchen to get water, I heard whispering sounds coming from Monty's room. At first, I thought maybe I imagined it, so I tiptoed to his room and peeked inside. You won't believe what I saw." I immediately asked him what. "I saw our son was sitting on the bed and praying. I mean, I have no issues with this sudden change, but you know, we've never been a very religious family. I wonder how he learned all that." Simon's voice sounded confused. We were both a bit worried, but you can't just scold a child for praying, right? So we didn't confront him at that point. One night, Diana came to babysit again. I instantly asked her, "Diana, if you don't mind, can I ask you something?" Diana replied with the same smiling face, "Sure, Mrs. Mendez, what is it?" I said in a hesitant voice, "Did you teach Monty to pray before bed?" She didn't get startled by my question. With the same calm expression on her face, she said, "What's wrong in praying, Mrs. Mendez?" Honestly, I had no logical answer to her question, so I just dropped the topic. I mean, seriously, no harm ever came from a 4-year-old kid praying before sleep, right? Days passed, and my son started to change into a completely different person. Monty stopped running around the house, or doing all those things to annoy me. Suddenly, he turned into an extremely quiet and introverted kid. At some point, his behaviors freaked me out. For example, one afternoon, I was working in the backyard. Monty was sitting on a swing and watching the birds fly in the sky. I said in a joyful voice what a lovely day it was, and asked Monty if he thought the same. He didn't reply like he used to. I was thinking to go and play with him, when suddenly a small bird fell on the ground. I rushed towards it and picked it up.
"Are you hurt, the little guy?"
And that was when Monty said something that made the hair on the back of my neck stand up. Monty walked close to me and looked at the bird and then said, "End its pain, Mom. It should die." I was shocked hearing these cruel words from a 4-year-old. I said, "Monty, why would you say something like that? Who told you all these things?" Suddenly, he looked at me, and I felt this was not the Monty I used to know. There was something in his eyes that spooked me that day. He smiled in a very evil way, and then went inside. I told my husband this incident, and we both came to the conclusion that Diana is leaving a bad impression on her son. So we decided to opt for a new babysitter the next time. And we finally did. The new babysitter's name was Corey. She was the daughter of our next door neighbor, so we knew her well. I said to Monty, "Monty, Corey will come and watch you tonight. Your father and I will be home as soon as we can." Monty looked at me with angry eyes and said, "Where's Diana?" I instantly replied, "She won't come here anymore. Corey's your new babysitter from now on." Monty started to argue, "No, I want Diana." I lost my calm voice and scolded him, saying, "I told you, Diana won't come here. Now go to your room. I don't want to hear another word about Diana." Corey came, but Monty didn't come out of his room. I left for work with a disturbed mind. After being at work for a while, I came out of the emergency room. I went to my desk to call home just to check on them. I was going to dial when I received a call from Diana. Out of irritation, I picked it up and said, "What?" Diana replied, "Mrs. Mendez, I don't think the new babysitter will be able to take good care of Monty. You should probably think again." I was disgusted to see the girl's audacity. I screamed on the phone, saying Monty was my son, and then I knew what was best for him. I told her if she didn't stay away, I would take serious action. I then disconnected the phone. My husband came and asked me what happened. I told him the entire matter. Still angry, I also told him I should have kicked that freak out the day she made a weird tattoo on our son. My husband looked at me with confused eyes and said, "What tattoo?" I explained to him it was a star inside a circle. Simon googled something on his phone and then showed it to me, saying, "Is this the symbol you're talking about?" It was indeed the symbol. Simon then said in a panicked voice, "We should have taken this matter more seriously." "Why?" I replied. "What does the symbol mean?" We came to know that it was actually a satanic symbol that cult groups worship. All the weird behavior of my son started to make sense to me. The thought of Diana being a cult member came to me. I immediately called the house to warn Corey to not let her in if she comes. I dialed her number, but it just kept ringing. My heartbeat grew rapidly, and Simon and I rushed towards the car. We called 911 on our way home. When we reached the house, we found the house in pitch darkness. Not a single light was on. As I walked close to the main door, I heard a chanting sound coming from Monty's room. I found the door locked from the inside. Simon twisted the key and the door finally opened. The entire house stood like a set from a horror film. There was this burning smell. I noticed someone was lying on the living room couch. Simon slowly walked, and we found Corey on the couch. She was unconscious, and there was dried blood on her forehead. It was clear someone hit her with a blunt object and made her unconscious. I ran to Monty's room, and I opened the door. That's when my heart sunk in terror. His room was filled with candles. Monty was lying on Diana's lap, and she was chanting some psychotic prayers. There was a circle made around them. And beyond all of that, she was holding a knife to my 4-year-old son's throat. I screamed at her what she was doing with my son. Diana opened her eyes and started to laugh like a maniac. I could see Monty woke from a sense of numbness and started to cry. Diana said in an evil voice, "The Dark Lord demands your son's soul. I'm preparing him for the sacrifice. Once I submit his soul, I'll be immortal. He'll give me all the powers he has promised." I screamed in response, saying that if she hurt my son, I would kill her. Diana just laughed and rose her knife while chanting her satanic prayers. I screamed at the top of my lungs, saying no. Suddenly, my husband rushed towards her, and before she could slice Monty's throat, Simon hit her with his baseball bat hard. It all happened so quick that Diana couldn't guess it coming. She fell on the floor, and blood started to flow from the back of her. Monty got up and rushed towards me while crying and shaking in fear. We called the cops, and they came shortly after to take her into custody. Corey was admitted to the hospital as well. Diana had been shifted to a mental institution after she recovered from the head injury. The cops came to know that she had joined a cult group. It still scares me to sleep that if we hadn't reached home in time, she would have actually sacrificed my son for some satanic ritual. Her psychotic chants still haunt me in my sleep. I started babysitting in high school for some extra cash. Back in those days, the only phones out were flip phones. So, it's pretty easy to guess this story happened a long time ago. I come from a suburban area. My dad was the local sheriff, though our town was boring when it came to crime and antisocial activities, so my dad often complained about not having a thrill in his job. Maybe this is why babysitting was quite a safe and fast-earning option among teenage girls of my age. One day, I was coming home with my friend. We were on the sidewalks, and there were barely any people out. We were talking about common high school stuff when I came close to a flyer board on my left. Back in those days, small towns like ours had bulletin boards to hang flyers and advertisements. There were flyers on general store discounts, local salon advertisements, and many other things. One had caught my eye though. It was a yellow-colored old pamphlet that read, "Babysitter wanted for a toddler," and then gave the contact number. Seeing the condition of the pamphlet, I realized it had been there for a long time. I didn't know if the ad was still active, but out of interest to earn some more cash, I took down the phone number on my cell phone. After coming home that evening, I dialed up the number. The line kept ringing for 2 to 3 seconds, and then someone picked it up. A man spoke in a low voice saying hello. It was weird though. Just from the sound of his voice, I could tell he was in pain or suffered a long-term illness. I said, hi there. I saw your advertisement. Are you still looking for a babysitter?" The man replied, "Yeah, absolutely. It's for my little son. Are you free tomorrow?" I instantly replied to this saying yeah, and then the man told me his address and said to be there by 7. And the next day, I decided to head towards the babysitting job right after college. The house was situated on the outskirts of town. It was a wooden house. I walked towards the house porch. I rang the doorbell, and the door creaked open on its own. At first, it startled me a bit. Then I looked down and saw a little boy standing in the doorway. I figured this was the kid the man was talking about. The boy looked frail and weak. I could tell from his wide eyes and bony body that he was not fed properly. I said, "Hi, I'm Ellie. Are your parents home?" The boy replied in a weak voice, "My mom left with the angry man. My dad is sick. Who are you?" I replied in an awkward voice, saying that I was called to babysit him. That's when I heard a man's sickly low voice coming from the back of the house. The voice told the kid to let me in. The kid looked at me once again and then let me in. The boy was probably 3 years old, but he looked in terrible condition. The house interior was stuffy and messy. It had been a long time since someone had cleaned that house, I could tell. At the end of the living room, I saw a bedroom door in the left corner. The boy pointed out in that direction and said, "That's my dad's room. He hasn't come out for 2 days since my mom left. He says he's not feeling well." I realized this kid's parents must have split up, and his mom left his dad for some other guy. I knocked on the door. Sir, it's me, Ellie. We talked over the phone about the babysitting job. Are you alright?" The man replied in the same voice, "I'm fine. I just need some privacy and rest. If you could please go to the kitchen and prepare some food for my son. He hasn't eaten for 2 days. And then go to the couch. You'll find a phone directory. There you'll find my mother's name under the name Mrs. Martha Saunders. Please call her to come get my son. I'm not well enough to take care of him." I felt bad for this entire family. The kid looked at me with big teary eyes. I replied to Mr. Saunders that of course I would help him, and I asked him if I should call an ambulance for him. He just replied saying that he was fine, and to just take care of his son until his grandma arrived. He also told me that there was a wooden box in the living room, and I was to take $50 for the trouble. People have their own way of coping with marriage issues. So, without dwelling further into the family matter, I went to the kitchen. There were unclean dishes everywhere. It was evident from the condition of the kitchen that the place hadn't been used for a few days. I found a packet of ready-to-cook pasta. I made it and placed it on a plate on the table. I then asked the little boy what his name was, and he replied saying he was Ted. I took him on my lap and sat down on the chair near the dining table. I fed him the pasta, and the way he ate it, I could tell he really hadn't eaten in a while. I felt bad for him. I felt a sense of anger towards the kid's mother. What kind of mom was she? She could have taken the kid with her, or at least called someone to help with her ill husband. The poor kid remained hungry for 2 days. After finishing the meal, I decided to give Ted a bath. That's when I noticed he had bruises all over his back. I asked in a surprised voice, "What happened, Ted? Who did this to you?" Ted stood quietly near the bathtub, and then just said that he hates the angry man, and he hates his mom, and they both made his dad sick. I asked if the man hurt him. Ted nodded with his head and hugged me with tearful eyes. My throat became heavy. I was disgusted knowing how anyone could do this to a child. I decided to tell his grandma so that she could call the cops and report the whole situation. The man he was talking about was probably his mom's boyfriend. I thought they both deserved to be in jail. I cleaned Ted and dressed him in his new clothes. Ted smiled for the first time and said, "You're a lot nicer than the other babysitters so far. My mom often went out leaving me with the babysitter whenever my dad wasn't home." I combed the kid's hair and asked him if he would like to show his dad. I was expecting a joyful expression, but instead, I saw Ted's face changing color. His face turned all pale and scared. He replied, "We shouldn't go to my dad's room. He scares me when he talks." In a confused tone, I asked how his own dad scared him. Ted looked around and then said in a low voice, "His lips never move. He doesn't even blink his eyes. He just keeps staring and a voice comes out of him. I get scared when he does that." The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I replied in a panicked voice, "Well, what do you mean?" Ted replied with his mom, and the angry man shouted at his dad. His dad then told him to leave, and he heard fighting in his dad's room. But after some time, his mom and the angry man came out and left immediately. He said he went to his dad's room and saw him lying on his bed like that, and he said he didn't go to his room anymore. He just talks from the inside, and Ted stands out near the closed door. His dad told him to wait for the next babysitter, and then he said surely someone would come after seeing the ads. I bolted out of the bathroom and rushed towards the bedroom where Mr. Saunders spoke to me. As I opened the door, a foul smell of dead flesh suffocated my lungs. I saw a rotten, dead body of a man laying on the bed. He was stabbed vigorously in the stomach. Clotted blood was all over the bed sheets and his clothes. His eyes were still wide open, looking directly at me. I came out of the room and felt sick to my stomach. Ted started to sob terribly seeing me react that way. He said in a sobbing voice, "Don't get sick like Dad. Please, I'm scared of being here alone." I sat down and gathered my thoughts. I hugged Ted close to my chest and eventually called 911 and his grandmother. The paramedics took out the dead body. Mrs. Saunders kept crying while holding her grandson. The cops investigated the case, and the horrifying story shivered our town. Ted's mom had an affair with a drug dealer. Out of anger and frustration, Mr. Saunders denied and rebuked his wife for what she did. The argument led to a fight, and the drug dealer boyfriend stabbed Ted's dad to death. Due to the fear of getting caught, Ted's mom ran away with the drug dealer, leaving poor Ted all alone with his father's corpse. To this day, this story still terrifies me when I recall Mr. Saunders speaking to me at first when I arrived. I recently went to go visit Ted, and he's now living with his grandma. The kid looked a lot happier last time I saw him. His grandma told me to take the money, as I did do the babysitting job. She thanked me profusely, saying that without me, her grandson would have died too. She then handed me the money, and I went home. I still don't know whether it was real or my mind playing some trick on my imagination. But whenever I close my eyes, I still remember how clearly the ghost of Mr. Saunders spoke to me that night. This happened recently. I'm an 18-year-old college girl. I came from a small family. My dad owns a small local store, and my mom works in a restaurant. I was a bright student since childhood, so my grades helped me get a few scholarships, which eventually paved my way to college. Even after a scholarship, college education proved to be quite expensive for a girl like me. So I decided to babysit. In my opinion, babysitting was better than a full-time job, as it gave me time to concentrate on my studies and also have an income to support my daily expenses. After doing it 5 to 6 times, I became quite confident and carefree about the perks of the job. That was until one incident that occurred in my life. Last week, I saw an advertisement for a babysitting job on our college website. Our college forum had a website to offer basic jobs for students to help them with their side income. One day, I was sitting in the college library going through the website for jobs when an ad caught my attention. The ad was given by a man named Mr. Wood. It said he needed a babysitter on the coming Saturday night for his twins, Marla and Roni. As I already said, I gained good experience in this field, so without wasting much time, I dialed the contact number. Mr. Wood told me to reach their house on Saturday night. I needed the money really bad, so instead of going to the club with my friends, I decided to work. As instructed, I reached the house mentioned in the address. The house was quite fancy. It was on the top of the hills, with no other neighboring houses nearby. The house was no doubt far away from my town, so I informed my dad just to be safe. I walked up to the stairs and reached the house porch. Hesitantly, I rang the doorbell. After waiting for 2 to 3 seconds, I heard footsteps walking up to the door. Finally, the door opened and I saw a man in his late 40s standing in an expensive suit. The man checked me out, which obviously made me uncomfortable, and then said, "You must be Lisa. Come on in." I smiled awkwardly and went inside the house. The house was even more luxurious from the inside. Big couches were facing a huge TV screen. A stair went up on my left, which I guess led to the bedrooms. The man then poured himself a drink and said, "I'm John Wood. Please take a seat." I sat down and he called out in a firm but irritated voice, "Marla, Roni, she's here. Come on down." As soon as he said it, I heard running footsteps from upstairs. A girl and a boy, aged between 3 and 4 years, came down and stood silently in the living room. Now, I've seen a lot of kids, but there was something off about these ones. I smiled at them and said, "Hi there, I'm Lisa." The girl looked at Mr. Wood. Mr. Wood gestured her to answer me, but none of them said a thing. Mr. Wood said in a strict voice, "Marla, say hi to Lisa, now." The girl smiled like a robot and said, "Hi, I'm Martha, this is Roni." I didn't like the way Mr. Wood pressured the kids to interact, because kids take time to mix in with new people. Also, seeing the boy and the girl, I felt they were scared of their father. I figured Mr. Wood might be a strict father, as raising 2 kids alone can be tough. Mr. Wood finished his drink and then said, "Lisa, I have a very important business meeting tonight. I'll be back by 9 p.m. And don't worry, I'll arrange an Uber for your return once I come back. There's plenty of food in the fridge. The kids go to sleep at 8 p.m. sharp. Make yourself comfortable." Mr. Wood then called someone, probably his business client, and said, "Yeah, I'm coming in a half hour." He looked again at the kids for one last time and said, "Don't do anything that you shouldn't do. And listen to Lisa. Alright, good night, you guys." Fathers can be strict when it comes to disciplining their children, but this father wasn't just harsh on them. He was somewhat emotionless, too. Mr. Wood left in his car, and I locked the main door. As I turned around, I saw the kids sitting on the couch and staring at me with their big, wide eyes. The boy, Roni, didn't say a single word so far, so I went to him and said, "It's just 6:30, and you guys have a lot of time before going to bed. So, do you guys want to do something for fun, or just watch TV?" Roni looked at his sister Marla and said, "She doesn't even look like us." I wasn't expecting this comment. I looked at them with a surprised face and said, "What do you mean?" Marla immediately replied, "Can we watch some cartoons until bedtime?" I realized what she was doing. Marla was being the bigger sister and trying to hide something regarding what his brother said. I just dropped the topic as well and said, "Okay, sure." The kid sat down on the couch and started to watch TV. It was a busy day and I barely had lunch. I opened the fridge and it was stacked with food. Like, literally too much food. I mean, the people living in the house was only 1 adult and 2 toddlers. Hence the hoarding of the food felt a bit odd at first. Then I thought, maybe it's difficult to run by the general store due to the distance. I sat down on the table near the kitchen window with a slice of cake. At other times, I often played games with the kids, but these kids were different, as I already said. The view from the table didn't cover the entire living room area, but it was perfect to keep an eye on the kids. The kids were laughing while watching cartoons. I got busy on my phone while eating the cake. I don't know how long I remained distracted, but suddenly I felt the ambience was too quiet. I lifted up my face, and my heart dropped. Marla and Roni were sitting on the floor like statues, and they were just watching me. Even though they were just two small kids, this weird stare creeped me out at that moment. I said, guys, what happened? Why are you sitting on the floor? They kept staring at me, and didn't say a single word. They didn't even look away. They were just staring at me with an expressionless face. I got up and said, okay, enough now. Let's put you guys to bed. It's already 7:30. Your dad'll be here any minute now. Marla and Roni got up slowly. They looked at each other and said, his name's Mr. Wood. He prefers to be called by that name only. I thought it was weird, but I ignored it. I went towards them and held their hands to take them upstairs. Suddenly, Marla said, why didn't you come to visit us all the time? I had no idea what these kids were talking about. I crouched onto their level and said, what are you talking about, Marla? Is everything alright with you two? Before Marla could answer my question, Roni said in a sad face, you were supposed to come earlier. Mr. Wood brought us here to meet you. Don't you love us? The hair on the back of my neck stood up. I was beyond confused at whatever these kids were telling me. I said in a clueless tone, why would I come visit you guys? And what do you mean by Mr. Wood brought you here? Marla broke into tears and said, please, Mom, take us with you. The sky above my head broke upon me. Mom? Sorry, sweetheart, but I'm not your mom. Can you please tell me what's going on here? I replied. Marla said, but you are. Mr. Wood said that you're our mom, but that you'll be angry if we called you that. So we didn't say anything at first. Are you angry? I realized there was something really wrong with these kids in their lives. I sat them both down and said, who's Mr. Wood? Is he not your father? Roni replied, Marla and I lived with the other children earlier in that old house. Mr. Wood talked to Aunt Christie and brought us here. He said he'd take us to our mother. And last night he said our mom was coming to meet us. And then you came. Please take us with you before Mr. Wood sends Roni to some other house. The situation was getting more and more tense with each second. Hearing these kids made me feel like this actually was not their house. And the man I just met was not really their father. I said, Mr. Wood wants to take Roni where? Marla replied with the same sad face. He said we'd be sent to stay with other people. And then one day, when we would grow up, he said he'd bring us back to you. But I don't want to go anywhere. I just want to be with you, Mom. I realized finally that these kids were in grave danger. Without wasting a second, I immediately called my dad. He called the cops, and they came to rescue the kids. Cops later arrested Mr. Wood that same night. It turns out this man was trafficking kids. He used to buy children from poor orphanages, and then would sell them who knows where. He must have had the same plan for these kids if they didn't meet me. Marla and Roni are now being adopted by a nice couple in our town. I often go to see them, and they still call me Mom, which I guess I don't mind, because whether they were my children or not my children, they deserve to be treated like children. I honestly feel proud of myself that I could save two young lives from getting lost in the darkness of this world.